I know you work with the youth baseball teams, so don't forget all the wonderful things that you're doing to live life to the fullest. That's not being a Peter Pan. That's truly enjoying a productive life. He leaned back in his chair, feeling like all his thoughts had been untangled. He had always been a genuinely happy person, for the most part, even after Afghanistan. But there had been an unnamed tension when he got back that he just could not ease. Finally, he could breathe freely again. Charles was right. He just needed to name it, voice it, in order to let it go. A vision of Leah's face moved through his mind, and he winced when he remembered her expression of disappointment by the end of their date. Lifting his gaze back to Charles, he said, "I'm no longer interested in meaningless flings, but have no idea how to move forward with a real relationship." Charles said, "In just the hour that we spent together today, Aiden, I can tell that you do know how. So now, tell me about the relationships in your life that you are good at, and why." Smiling, he said, "That's easy. My family's fabulous. My parents have been married forever, so were my grandparents. They raised me and my brother and sister to be close. We watch out for each other, work together, sometimes fight together, but always laugh together. The Baytown boys were my closest friends growing up. I would drop anything in an instant to be there for any one of them, and that includes the women that many of them have fallen in love with now." "Okay, so what I hear you say is that you have the ability to be loyal, dedicated, loving, and put those people you care about ahead of your own needs. Does that sound about right?" He grinned and said, "Man, when you put it that way, I feel like a pretty decent guy." Charles threw his head back and laughed. "Yeah, I'd say so too." Sobering, he held his gaze and said, "And now for the hard part. If you have the capacity for all that, what were the most important things with a fling?" Blushing, he responded,
I guess easy. No commitment. Preferred not to see them again. Definitely not spending the night with someone. God, it does make me sound bad, but really it was just about sex."
"I think while the physical act of sex without an emotional attachment might be very normal for some people, it ended up making you feel as meaningless as the non-existent emotions. Thinking about how you are with your friends and family, I think the answer for how to build a true relationship lies within you." As self-doubt slid away from him, he sat up straighter in his chair.
"I know it won't be easy, so I have to be willing to work at it. I have no problem being loyal, but I have to be able to convince her that I'm in it for the commitment. It's been a long time since I've ever spent the entire night with a woman, but for Leah, the idea of holding her all night is exactly what I want to do. And while I think she's beautiful, and I'd be a liar if I said there were no sexual feelings, what I really want to do is just be with her."
"Then my suggestion is to do just that. Just be with her. And while it might take time for her to learn to trust you, that will come." Standing, they shook hands, and afterwards, he tilted his head to the side and said,
"This seems too easy. I thought counseling was going to be a long, agonizing process."
Charles laughed again. "Well, not every counseling session is quite so straightforward. I would like to see you again, though, because you do have some nightmares. I think it would be healthy to explore a little more about what happened to you in Afghanistan, if you are amenable to that." He nodded his head slowly.
"Absolutely. I think that's definitely something that would help."
After setting up another appointment time with the receptionist, he stepped out into the sunshine, sliding his sunglasses onto his face. The warmth penetrated, and for the first time in a long time, he felt confident. Smiling, he walked down the road toward the pub. Entering, he observed the usual afternoon crowd, with Brogan behind the bar. His brother looked up, catching his eye and holding his gaze, Brogan's curiosity and concern evident. With a smile and a nod, he silently communicated that he was fine. Brogan grinned and nodded before pulling another beer for one of their customers.
"It's kind of quiet in here," he called out loudly. "Why don't we crank up the music and get this place hopping?"
As he walked behind the bar, grinning widely, Brogan popped him on the back of the head.
"Why do you gotta be so loud in front of the customers?"
He answered with a continued grin and was met with Brogan's wide smile in return. Moving to the back of the bar, he recognized the wonderful feeling of coming home. Chapter 14. "Mrs. Markham," Leah called out, I think the new accountant, Mr. Redding's grandson, is supposed to show up this morning. I'm trying to get ready to meet with the town council after lunch, so as soon as he comes in, please show him back. Receiving acknowledgement from Mrs. Markham, she finished her preparations for meeting with the town council. She had read the audit that was provided to her by the mayor and had concerns. She hoped that the members of the various departments in the town would cooperate, but she knew that most people who knew that they were being investigated would not welcome her with open arms. Her mind began to wander, and visions of Aiden filled her head. After hearing what his family had to say, and considering how things had been between them after they had cleared the air and started fresh, she realized she had been unfair to him the other night. Her original impression of him was so wrong, and rather than put that aside and see him for who he was, she had let her own insecurities get the better of her, and had laid such judgment at his feet because of it. The reality was, he made her laugh. He made her comfortable enough to share about her marriage with Carl and the difficulties she had had with Emily. He treated her with kindness and respect, and she had repaid him with criticism and suspicion. Embarrassment flooded her, and she determined to make amends. She started to send him a text, but then decided she preferred to talk to him face to face. Closing her notes, she carefully put them in her briefcase just in time to look up as the new accountant arrived. Following Mrs. Markham into her office was a tall, dark-haired man. She rose from her chair and made her way around her desk to shake his hand. She had pictured a young man barely out of college, but this man was obviously closer to 30 years old. "Welcome, Scott. I see you met Mrs. Markham." His handshake was warm and firm, and as he smiled down at her, she was immediately relieved. Waving him to one of the seats, she sat down at her desk, eager to get acquainted. "I have to confess that I'm very excited about you joining our firm. As you know, I only took over for your retiring grandfather a couple of months ago. Tax accounting is not my forte. I can certainly handle the basics, but I'm not comfortable making that the full practice. My specialty is forensic accounting, but of course I know that there's usually not enough work for me to do that full time. On a normal basis, I'm sure we'll have enough work for both of us to stay quite busy. As it turns out, right now, the town council has asked me to take a look at their books." Scott's eyebrows lifted, and he said,
"That's interesting. Did something come up in their audit?"
Nodding, she confirmed, "Yes, and it made the mayor concerned enough that he was forced to take it to the town council. In fact, I have to meet with them right after lunch today." They chatted for a few more minutes, and he told her of growing up in Accomack County and visiting his grandfather in Baytown when he was a child. He glanced around the office and smiled, saying,
"I like your decorations much more than my grandfather's stuffy diplomas on the wall."
She laughed and replied, "There's still more I'd like to do, but I've been so busy since I got here. Unfortunately, as you know, we don't have another office, but the conference room is so rarely used, I'm going to suggest that we make that your office."
"That's perfect," he replied.
He looked at his watch and said,
"Do you have time for lunch before your meeting? We could grab something, chat a little more, and then you'll be ready to meet with the town council."
"That would be lovely."
"We could always go to the pub," he suggested. "They have great lunches."
Blinking in surprise, she quickly rallied, "I think perhaps I'd prefer the seafood shack today, if you don't mind." Standing together, he allowed her to walk out before him, saying,
"It's been a long time since I've been there. That sounds great."
Walking out with her new employee, she breathed a sigh of relief, knowing she would not run into Aiden. Aiden walked out of the seafood shack manager's office, having taken a few minutes to stop by and say hello. He had been killing time as he waited for the Carson and Sons fishing boat to come back into the harbor. Purchasing the fresh fish from local fishermen was one of his favorite duties at the pub. With a chin lift, he said his goodbyes to the bartender and moved toward the front door. Looking around as he went, he did a double take when he glanced to the side and observed Leah sitting with a man he did not know. Instantly alert, he leaned over to get a better view. The man was tall, dark-haired, and wearing a business suit. A strange feeling hit his gut, and he realized he was staring jealousy in the face, an emotion he was unused to. Keeping his eye on the couple, he noted they were not holding hands, nor did the man touch Leah in any way.
"Which is good, or I'd have to break his hand."
He continued to watch for a moment as the two of them chatted. Then, unable to stop his feet, he found himself heading straight for them. She looked up as he approached and blinked in surprise. He could have sworn a flash of uncertainty moved through her eyes before her smile widened as she greeted him. "Aiden," she called out.
"Leah," he said, barely recognizing his rough voice.
He watched her blink again before she glanced to the side at the man she was with. "This is Scott, Scott Redding. He's Thomas Redding's grandson and has joined the accounting firm."
Fighting the ever-growing feelings of jealousy at the thought of the college-educated, business-suit-wearing man being around Leah every day, he accepted the handshake offered to him.
He was so focused on Scott, he did not realize Leah was speaking to him until he felt a slight squeeze on his arm. Jerking his eyes back to her, he tilted his head in question.
"I have a meeting with the mayor this afternoon, and I have a feeling it's going to take the rest of the day, but, I had planned on calling you later. If that's all right. That is, if you're not busy or have plans or something."
As though his world tilted on its axis, falling into place, he met her nervous gaze with a wide smile.
"Leah, you can call me anytime. I'm always available for you."
The words were true, but he hoped she realized there was meaning in them. She and Scott stood, and he observed their meal was finished. Holding out his arm for them to lead the way, he followed behind. Walking out, he looked over to the harbor and saw that the fishing vessel had returned. He watched Leah and Scott walk across the parking lot, heading back toward Main Street, and he sighed. Within the hour, he had the ice chests of fresh fish and seafood loaded into the back of his truck. Needing to get back to the pub, he climbed into the driver's seat, his mind full of Leah. Slumping down, he thought back to his conversation with Charles.
"I know it won't be easy, so I have to be willing to work at it."
Finally cranking his truck, he put it in drive and headed toward the pub, more determined than ever to show Leah he could be the man for her. Leah fought to keep from rolling her eyes as Mayor Banks droned on to the town council. Silas Mills, the town manager, was also in attendance, but his mannerisms were far from welcoming. Slender, with a thin, weasel-like face, it was hard to imagine that he had been rumored to have had an affair with Corwin's secretary while being engaged to another woman. Shaking the musings from her mind, she brought herself back to the matter at hand, realizing that Corwin had finally stopped talking and was turning the meeting over to her. She pointed out the areas of the audit that had brought out the discrepancy and outlined the steps she would be taking to try to identify the missing money and the person responsible. The town council consisted of 6 members, all appearing concerned, and promised her the town departments would work with her. After she had answered their questions, the meeting was adjourned, each member shaking her hand. As they filed from the room, she turned to Corwin and said,
"Thank you for the records that you've already sent to me, and I would like to go ahead and meet whoever I can today. When I'm ready to formally interview them, I will set up my own appointments for that."
"Fine, fine," Corwin said, turning and moving toward the door.
Looking back over his shoulder, he called out,
"Silas, come on. You need to be a part of this, too."
She cast her gaze to the side and saw Silas's blatant irritation as his lips pinched and eyes narrowed. Her curiosity grew, but she left her face studiously blank. She found it easier when interviewing people if they were unable to see what she was thinking. They stepped from the town council conference room into a hall that led to the back of the municipal building, bypassing the lobby and continuing to where the main offices were. Corwin's secretary was sitting at a desk right outside of his office, situated where she could also see into Silas's office. Celia Ring jumped to her feet as soon as Corwin and Silas came into view, her eyes darting between the two men and Leah. Leah wondered if she imagined that, for an instant, Celia's eyes narrowed on her. Nervousness? Jealousy? Insecurity? She also noted that Celia's desk was a large, highly polished oak desk, and her chair was a thick, comfortable leather chair. Odd, considering the furniture in the town council's conference room had been more utilitarian, and, from a previous visit to the building's lobby, she also knew the receptionist's furniture was a plain metal desk. She was trained not to make hasty judgments, but simply to pay attention to her surroundings whenever she was investigating possible fraud. So she simply filed that little observation into the back of her mind.
"Celia," Corwin barked, "give me Sandra and Mark. While you're at it, get the others into my conference room as well."
"Absolutely," Celia purred, sitting back into her chair and immediately picking up her phone. As she walked into the mayor's office, she watched Celia's gaze slide over to Silas, her lips curving in a smile. Corwin's office was also understated opulence for a tiny town, consisting of heavy wooden furniture paired with thick leather chairs. Artwork on his paneled walls indicated that he liked to surround himself with the accoutrements of what he considered his position to be. Silas darted through the door to the right, saying, "I need to make a quick call. I'll be right there." Corwin led her through the door on the left and into his nicely appointed conference room, with a huge wooden table in the center, and she settled into one of the comfortable seats at the end of the table. Corwin sat at the other end, and she watched as he fiddled with his phone, as though he wanted to limit his time making conversation with her. Within a moment, several other people walked into the room, some smiling, some not, and she nodded politely at each of them as they took seats. Silas had made it back into the room and glowered as he took the only seat left, the one next to her. She took notes as they each introduced themselves to her. Sandra Toski, the elected town treasurer, Mark Weber, the accounting clerk, Silas Mills, town manager, and rounding out the table was Celia Ring, the mayor's secretary. She knew there were many other departments in the town's staff and would be looking over their finances as well, but all checks and purchases went through the finance department represented at the table, so they were a good place to start. Used to this type of meeting, she launched into her explanation of what she would be doing in her forensic accounting investigation and what she would need from each of them. All eyes were on her, some heads nodding in acquiescence, some jaws clenched, some eyes wide in surprise, and others narrowed in irritation. At the close of the meeting, she indicated for Sandra and Mark to wait behind. She gave each of them a list of the reports that she would need from them and asked that they would send them electronically to her. Gaining their agreement, she smiled as she said goodbye and watched them file out of the room. Alone in the room, she breathed a sigh of relief. She loved delving into the numbers and tracing where money came from and where it was spent. It was like a puzzle, and she enjoyed fitting the pieces together and finding out which ones were not right. Standing, she was surprised when Silas stepped back into the conference room. He approached her, his face pinched as he asked if he could speak to her privately. "Of course," she replied. He glanced behind him at the closed door that led to Corwin's office and said, "I know that Corwin is trying to do the right thing by bringing you in. I personally don't see that there's a problem. Certainly not a problem worth making a big deal about. But you've got to understand, this is an election year. He's been the elected mayor for almost 18 years and has done a wonderful job for this town. He and his wife support lots of different activities and benefits for Baytown. I would hate to think that news of your little investigation would get out and harm his chances of being reelected."
"Mr. Mills, I assure you that I treat every investigation with the utmost professionalism. My goal is to discover if there has been financial wrongdoing on someone's part. I would think if you have the town's well-being first and foremost in your mind, you would want that to happen."
"Of course I do," he bit back. "I just want to make sure everything is done as quickly and discreetly as possible, so that nothing interferes with Corwin's re-election."
Bending, she gathered her files into a neat stack and placed them into her leather briefcase. Slinging it, and her purse, over her shoulder, she turned and faced him once again. "I will do the job that I've been hired to do. It will take as long as it needs to take to be an accurate representation of what is happening. Good day."
With that, she pushed past him and moved into the hall, noting Celia had been standing right next to the door. The secretary jumped before hurrying to her desk. Walking down the hall, she noted Sandra and Mark in one of their offices, heads bent as they talked. She gratefully stepped out of the building into the sunshine and sucked in the fresh air. As she walked back to her office, she sighed, knowing that she wanted to talk to Aiden, but had hours of work that needed to be accomplished first.
Chapter 15.
"Hello."
Aiden turned toward the sultry voice, eyeing the customer sitting at the bar. Makeup applied for maximum effect, hair teased out for maximum volume, clothes tight and revealing, but not over-the-top slutty. Just the type of woman that would have caught and held his eye not that long ago. But no more.
Moving down toward her, he nodded toward her half-empty glass and asked,
"Need a refill?"
She smiled and tapped a long, painted fingernail on the side of her glass.
"My drink is fine for now, but I was wondering about later."
Pretending to not understand her flirtatious invitation, he replied,
"Well, if you need a refill on your drink later, you just have to ask."
With a polite nod, he moved back down the bar to check on another customer. Brogan approached and, with a low voice, asked,
"Are you okay?"
Tilting his head, he looked into Brogan's quizzical face.
"Yeah."
Brogan jerked his head in the direction of the other end of the bar and asked,
"Not interested?"
Shaking his head, he replied,
"Nope."
"Leah?"
Sighing, he grabbed the beer he had just pulled and set it in front of a customer.
"I'm just not interested. Well, at least not interested in anyone other than Leah, so yeah, I guess you're right. I've got to prove to her that I'm more than just what everyone thinks of me, you know? Aiden, everyone thinks you're a great guy."
He turned and faced Brogan, his hands on his hips.
"You know as fucking well as I do that everyone thinks I'm just out for a good time."
Brogan held his gaze for a long time before slowly shaking his head.
"Your friends know who you really are, the man deep inside, the one who cares about everybody."
Dropping his chin to his chest, he stared at his boots for a moment, letting Brogan's words sink in. Looking back up, he said,
"That may be, but I still need to prove to her that I'm not just out for a casual night. As far as I'm concerned, those days are over."
Hearing the female customer call out again, saying she was ready for a new drink, he sighed. Starting to move, Brogan stopped him with a hand on his shoulder.
"No worries, Aiden, I got this."
He watched Brogan walk over and refill the woman's drink, while she glowered at both of them. Grinning, he headed to the back toward the kitchen. A few minutes later, he felt his phone vibrate in his pocket, and he pulled it out. Seeing the call was from Leah, he answered it immediately.
"Hey,"
he said, finding his heart beating faster at the anticipation of hearing her voice.
"Hi,"
she replied. That one word was filled with nervousness, and he rushed to reassure her.
"I'm so glad you called. I've been hoping you would."
"I didn't know if this was a bad time," she said. "I'm sure there's a crowd at the pub."
"Don't worry about it. I always have time for you."
"Oh, okay. Well, I wanted to talk to you about something."
"Can I come by your house?"
She was silent for a few seconds, so he pressed,
"It's kind of loud here, but I can leave any time. I could swing by your place and we could chat there."
"Sure, yeah, that'll be fine. We'll be home whenever you want to come." Pleased that she indicated Emily would be there as well, he breathed a sigh of relief. Somehow, knowing that her daughter would be present made him feel better, as though she trusted him.
"I just need to check on some things in the kitchen, so I can be there in about 30 minutes.
Disconnecting after saying goodbye, he headed back to the bar to tell Brogan he would be leaving soon, before returning to the kitchen with a huge grin on his face. Leah heard her cell phone vibrate on the kitchen counter and quickly set the glasses in her hand down. Grabbing her cell, she answered,
"Hello?"
No one spoke. Wondering if the connection had been delayed, she repeated,
"Hello?"
While confused at the prank call, she was glad it was not Aiden calling to cancel. Disconnecting, she tossed her phone down at the interruption. Turning back to her preparations, she heard Emily call out,
"Mama, I see him. It's Mr. Aiden. Can I open the door?"
Emily ran back from the living room to the kitchen and looked up at her. Taking a pan from the oven, she smiled at her daughter.
"Yes, you may open the door for him."
Emily turned and ran back toward the front, throwing open the door before the doorbell rang.
"Hi, Mr. Aiden."
She placed the hot dish onto the trivet and pulled off the oven mitts, tossing them to the counter. Walking down the hall, she saw Aiden smiling as he squatted in front of Emily.
"Hey, darling,"
he greeted.
"Did your mom say it was okay for you to open the door by yourself?"
A warm feeling slid through her as she heard the concern for her daughter in his voice. Before she had a chance to speak, Emily was telling him that she had seen him from the window and had been given permission to open the door. Stepping into the room, she watched as his gaze slid beyond Emily to her, his smile widening. Standing, he allowed Emily to escort him into the room. As he reached her, he leaned forward and placed his hand on her waist, bending to kiss her cheek.
"I'm glad you called. It's really nice to see you again. I know it's only been a couple of days, but it feels like so much longer.
Rolling her eyes, she said in an exaggerated voice,
I'm sure.
He held her gaze and said,
I'm being honest, Leah. I understand your concerns, but I really missed you.
His blue eyes burned into hers, sending warmth throughout her entire body. Unable to speak, she stared into his handsome face, fighting the urge to lean up on her tiptoes and kiss him.
Mama, is Mr. Aiden going to stay for dinner?
Emily's voice jolted through her, jerking her back to reality. She felt the heat of blush hit her face and was unable to keep the smile away.
We have plenty, and we're just getting ready to sit down. Would you like to join us?
If it was possible for his smile to widen even more, it did.
I can't think of anything I'd rather do, he replied, than have dinner with you two lovely ladies.
Emily giggled, and she sent her into the kitchen to set another place at the table. Before following, she leaned toward him and said,
What I want to talk to you about has to do with Emily, but I'd rather we talk privately. Absolutely. You just let me know when, and I'm all ears.
With that out of the way, she nodded and led him back to the small table in the Eden kitchen. As she served the homemade chicken pot pie casserole, she noted the ease with which he communicated with Emily. He did not over-exaggerate his speech, nor did he speak too slowly. He made sure that he was facing her when he spoke, and appeared to be careful to make sure she was understanding. And from the laughter elicited from Emily, he was communicating successfully, without making her daughter feel different. Walking back to the kitchen counter to grab the plate of dinner rolls, it struck her. What Carl was unwilling to learn with his own daughter, Aiden was doing with ease. Setting the rolls on the table, she took her seat and smiled up at him, entering their conversation. He ate with relish, obviously enjoying the meal.
This is really good, Leah.
I consider that high praise, since you own a restaurant. He nodded and wiped his lips with his napkin.
There are a lot of benefits to owning my own restaurant, and tasting what comes out of the kitchen is one of them. But at the same time, I sometimes get tired of that. Honestly, I practically never have a home-cooked meal, unless I stop by my mom's or Caitlin's or Brogan's house. So to me, this is a real treat.
Then you can eat with us every night, Emily said. That way you'll always have a good dinner.
Chuckling, he nodded.
I wouldn't mind that at all, darling. But I'm not sure your mom's up to having company every night.
The idea that he might not be talking just about dinner rushed through her mind, sending tingles throughout her body. Forcing her mind back onto the topic, she said,
Anytime you're hungry, you're welcome to dinner, although sometimes it might just be takeout pizza.
Before he had a chance to respond, Emily asked if she could watch TV before going to bed. She agreed and watched as her daughter skipped out of the room.
I'll help you clean up, Aiden said,
but halted when her hand snaked out and grabbed his arm.
I thought maybe we could talk now, since Emily's out of the room. Sure, he responded, his brow lowered in concern. What's going on?
She sucked in a deep breath, exhaling slowly.
It's just that, and I've done a little research, so I know it can be done, but I just don't know quite how it works, and I'm not even sure it would be a good idea.
Jesus, Leah, he said, leaning forward to cover her hands with his own.
You're making me nervous here. Just tell me what you're thinking.
Emily wants to learn how to play baseball with your team, she blurted. He blinked, slowly, twice. Watching him, she scrunched her forehead and said,
Is that bad? Would it work? She's never wanted to play a sport before, and quite frankly, I'm not athletic either, so it never bothered me that she didn't want to participate. But now she wants to, and I just thought that maybe you could, help her somehow.
After having rebuffed him at the end of their date, she worried that asking him to help Emily might not be the right thing to do.
It's fine for you to say no. I probably shouldn't have even asked. Leah, I think it's a great idea.
He squeezed her hand, bringing her gaze back to his.
Honest to God, I'm so honored that you asked me. This is going to be great,
he enthused, his eyes shining and his smile firmly back on his face.
Really?
She asked, hope burning in her chest.
Absolutely.
He leaned in closer, his hands still holding onto hers.
There are deaf baseball players, hell, deaf players in all sports. With her partial hearing and ability to read lips, coaching her in a game would be just a matter of making sure we are right in front of her. Other than that, she can easily learn signals, and we can learn some basic sign language. and until she's ready, I can give her private lessons, so she'll learn how to throw and hit the ball.
She felt tears sting the backs of her eyes, and she tried to keep them from falling. Her voice raspy, she asked,
"You'd really be willing to do that for her?"
She watched as the bright blue in his eyes dulled slightly.
"You think I wouldn't?"
Unintentionally, she had insulted him with her concern, so she rushed to explain,
"Oh, no, I know you're a good person, and that you would want to do that for her. I just meant, it's a huge commitment. I didn't know if you had the time, if it was too much to ask of you."
Inhaling deeply, still battling tears, she continued,
"She really wants you to teach her, and so do I."
His smile returned, and he lifted his left hand to gently wipe away a tear that had fallen over her cheek, continuing to cup her face after the tear had been captured.
"Please believe me when I tell you that I really want to do this."
"I owe you an apology, Aiden," she began, wanting to make things right. "I wasn't trying to judge you at the end of our date, but I've come to realize how Carl's behavior has tainted how I look at other people. You gave me no reason to believe that you had any other interest on our date other than me, or that you were unreliable or not ready for a commitment. I allowed my own insecurities, my fear that you would get tired of us and walk away, to be foisted upon you."
Shaking his head, he said,
"I accept your apology, but only if you'll accept one from me, too. I've gone through life since I got back from the war pretty much living the way I wanted, without giving any real consideration to how it might affect others. I certainly never gave any consideration to how it might affect a future relationship. That was a mistake I made, and unfortunately one that I can't go back and change. But I've decided to take steps to look at my past behavior, figure out why I acted in certain ways, and decide how I want my future to be. So my apology to you is for any previous behavior of mine that causes you to be embarrassed or doubt me."
A smile slipped across her lips as she nodded.
"Another fresh start? For real this time?"
"Absolutely," he said,
leaning forward to kiss her forehead.
"Now how about we go tell Emily about her new baseball lessons?"
Giving her cheeks a quick swipe to rid them of any remaining tears, she stood, feeling so much lighter than she had in a long time.
Chapter 16. Aiden stepped into his parents' house, the familiar scent of beef stew and buttered bread filling the air. With their schedules, weekly family meals were a thing of the past, but his mother insisted that they still eat together at least twice a month. Their family had grown, but it only added to the fun. Coming down the hall, his father greeted him with arms full of little Finn. He tickled his nephew's tummy before walking over to say hello to Pops. Brogan walked out of the kitchen with a beer and handed it to him before settling in next to their grandfather. Thanking him, he headed into the dining room where Gareth was setting up the high chair. Moving to Ginny, who was setting the table, he gave her a quick kiss on the cheek.
"How are you feeling?"
She rolled her eyes, but then smiled and rubbed her stomach. "I wish everyone would stop asking me that. I'm pregnant, not terminal." Laughing, he put his hands up in surrender and stepped into the kitchen to greet Caitlin and his mom. Soon, with everyone seated around the table, the conversation was lively, as he had remembered it being his entire life. Laughing and talking was now interrupted with intermittent screams of delight from his nephew, vying for the attention of the crowd, but that just made him smile. His mom passed him the plate full of bread and asked, "So, Leah?" His spoon halted on its way to his mouth as the table went suddenly quiet, all eyes on him.
"Leah?"
"Now, Aiden, don't play dumb with me. From what I hear, you were seen out with her, dining at the Sunset Restaurant, and have now spent the past week at her house every evening."
Looking at his siblings for help, Brogan and Caitlin just stared at him, both fighting a grin. His dad leaned back in his chair and said,
"Don't know how you thought you were going to keep it a secret from your mom."
Gareth shot him a sympathetic look before turning his attention back to his son, and Ginny grinned widely. Finally looking toward Pops, he saw the twinkle in his grandfather's eyes. Sighing, he laid his spoon down and turned toward his mom.
"I wasn't really trying to keep it a secret," he said, shrugging slightly. "We got close after the music festival, when I took her and Emily home. We spent a little time together, and I really wanted to take her out, so we went to dinner."
Shooting Pops another glance, he admitted,
but I'm afraid my past, somewhat indiscreet behavior bit me in the, back end. I can't really blame her, but that night she told me she didn't think we should go out again, and that we should just be friends.
The expression on his mother's face cut into him, not because she was staring at him with any censure, but because she looked like a mother who hurt for their child. Shaking his head, he said,
"Don't feel sorry for me, Mom. I never saw a reason to not enjoy myself however I wanted, so I gave no thought as to how it might look to someone that I really wanted to be with."
"I can see where that would be a tough lesson to learn," she said. Holding his gaze, she asked, "But now? You've been going to her house every evening, right?" A smile slid across his face as he nodded.
"I'm not sure what all happened to change her mind, but she invited me to dinner, and we had a good time. Then she asked me if I would work with Emily, to teach her how to play baseball. Emily wants to play, but Leah is real nervous because of Emily's hearing impairment. I told her that lots of people with hearing impairments play sports, including baseball, and I'd be honored to work with her."
Pops winked at him, but as he stared at the rest of his family, he was taken aback by their smiles. His mom spoke first. "Aiden, honey, you've always been someone who enjoys life. That's nothing to be ashamed of."
"You're my mother, you have to say that. But then," he added, "I also know you wondered if I was ever settling down."
Grinning, she said, "Well, now that you mention it." Brogan looked over and commented,
"Leah's got a 6-year-old daughter."
He looked over at his brother, not understanding why Brogan was stating something he obviously knew, and said,
Yeah, I was just talking about her. You ready for that?"
"Brogan," his mom and Ginny said at the same time.
"No, no,"
he shushed them.
"Brogan's right. For the man I've been in the past, this absolutely would give others pause."
Facing Brogan, he explained,
"I've been doing a lot of soul searching, figuring out why I've been avoiding any type of entanglement. And the truth is, I've been doing this searching because of Leah. I don't know what the future holds, but if all she's willing to offer me right now is friendship and a chance to coach her daughter, then I'm going to take it."
Brogan held his gaze and asked,
"And if it leads to more?"
He smiled.
"Then I'm going to be one lucky man."
He picked up his spoon and began to eat again, missing the smiles bouncing around the table between all the members of his family. Leah rubbed her forehead and sighed. The slight ache that had been threatening since the early morning was now blossoming into a full-blown headache. It had been a few weeks on this case now, and it was starting to take its toll. She had spent most of her time in her own office going over the many records that had been sent to her from the town treasurer, but now she sat in a small room in the municipal building, facing an irate town manager.
"I can't believe it's taking this long," Silas growled.
"You may not know it, but many investigations take a year to complete," she retorted. "I have set everything else aside and given it to my partner so that I can devote my full-time attention to this one investigation. I am working as fast as I can, while making sure not to make any errors.
I'm concerned about town council members, who might run their mouths to the press before the election."
"That, Mr. Mills, is not my concern. The only thing that is my concern is making sure that I find out where the missing money is and who took it." Looking back down at the files in front of her, she finished, "If that is all, I'll get back to work." By the way he stalked out of the office, slamming the door behind him, it was obvious he hated being dismissed. Groaning, she battled the urge to throw something at the closed door. Reaching into her purse, she pulled out some ibuprofen and swallowed it with the last sip of her now cold cup of tea. A knock sounded on the door, and she pulled herself together. Having asked Sandra for an interview, she expected that's who it was.
"Come in, please."
Sandra Toski entered the room, a tight smile on her face. Sitting in the chair across from her, she placed her forearms on the table, her hands clasped together. She appeared to be in her early 40s, simply dressed in a button-up blouse and slacks. Her hair was neatly trimmed in a blonde, chin-level bob. After greeting her in a friendly, professional manner, she began her interview.
"In going over the records, it takes quite a while to check all of the receipts, compare them to the purchase orders, and then compare them to the check that is cut. I just want to double-check the procedure, as it has been explained to me. All of the department heads send in their purchase orders to you, and it is your job to approve them or send them back to the department head to be revised."
Her posture still on guard, Sandra nodded.
Every year I hold a meeting with all the department heads in town and go over the new rules for getting bids, purchase orders, and any other information they need to have. But of course, some of them still get things wrong. So if I see that the regulations have not been followed when I receive a purchase order, then it goes back to them along with an explanation of what they need to do to correct it. Those are sent to me electronically, and so is my response, so that I have a record in case there was ever a question.
Excellent, she said, smiling slightly at Sandra. In looking at the actual checks, you prepare them and the mayor signs them, correct?
Yes.
And if he's unavailable?
Sandra blinked, her brows lowering, a question crossing her face. Unavailable? He's never... I don't know what you mean.
If he's not available to sign the checks at the time that you are ready for him, she explained.
Shaking her head, Sandra replied, I usually do checks toward the end of the day and take them for him to sign. If he's in a meeting or unavailable, Celia locks them in her desk until he is available. He signs them as soon as he is able, and either he or she brings them back to me. If he has a question about one, then he and I discuss it.
I see. And you have been in this position for quite some time, haven't you?
Yes. I've been the elected town treasurer for the last 10 years. I take my job seriously, and can assure you that I was unaware of any problems until the audit was finished.
Thank you for your time, and I'll let you know if I have further questions.
Sandra stood quickly, but hesitated before leaving, as though uncertain she was truly dismissed. She offered her a polite nod before looking back down at her computer and heard Sandra leave the room. She believed that a financial investigation involved peeling the layers back slowly and never giving away more information to an interviewee than she was ready to at the time. Several minutes later, there was another knock on the door. She looked up to see Mark Weber standing there. The young man appeared anxious as she waved him in, having him sit in the same chair that Sandra just left.
Hi, Miss Smith. I was told that you wanted to talk to me this afternoon, so as soon as I saw Sandra leave, I thought I would jump in.
It's nice to see you again. What I'm doing today is getting some preliminary information. As I'm sure you know, I've been reviewing the records, but it's helpful for me to hear from people exactly what their particular duties are.
Okay, gotcha. Well, I guess my job covers a lot of different things. I only have an associate's degree in finance, but hope to be able to get back to school to get my bachelor's in accounting. I've been at this job for a year to get some experience.
Nodding, she could not help but smile at his enthusiasm. What specifically are you in charge of?
When I was hired, my job description sounded pretty broad. I'm supposed to help with the treasurer when she needs it. I'm also in charge of maintaining the accounting records and reports for payroll and timekeeping. Most of the department heads keep track of their own employees, but then they all have to send their timekeeping and payroll to me. The bookkeeping is pretty basic, and I mostly just enter the figures into the computer so that they will be there for the treasurer.
Do you ever fulfill any of her duties if she is not available?
Eyes wide, he swallowed audibly.
Oh, no, ma'am, he said with an emphatic shake of his head. I do exactly what my duties tell me to do, and not one thing more. Not that I don't want to be helpful, he rushed, but I'm not about to do something I shouldn't do.
After a few more questions, she was ready to call it a day and thanked him. Once he left, she continued jotting down a few notes, compiled a few more records, saved everything to her laptop, and shoved all the papers into her briefcase. Glad for the day to be over, she walked out into the lobby of the municipal building. Celia and Sandra were standing near the mayor's door, deep in discussion. Both stopped talking as she walked by, and she chose not to look their way as her phone vibrated an incoming text. Stepping outside, she pulled her phone out of her purse, and for the first time that day, smiled.
Come to Town Field. We have a surprise.
Aiden and Emily had been practicing in her backyard for the last several weeks, so she was anxious to see what surprise they had for her. She drove over the train tracks and parked in the lot near the town baseball field. Climbing out of her car, she noted the other vehicles around and was barely able to hear some voices coming from the stands. Mind on her daughter and Aiden, she hurried past the bleachers to the fence, where she saw them gathered with several others. A quick glance over her shoulder gave evidence that Tori, Jade, Belle, Jillian, and Ginny were the ones she heard on the bleachers. Drawing closer, she observed all the coaches, Brogan, Jason, Mitch, Grant, Zach, and Caitlin. Also, Emily's teacher Jade was on the field as well. Her stomach clenched in nerves, but one look at Emily's wide smile, and she relaxed.
Hey, baby, what's going on?
Mama,
We've been practicing, and Coach Aiden wanted me to meet with the other coaches. He's teaching me and them how to play.
Catching her daughter's excitement, and also understanding her meaning, she lifted her gaze to Aiden.
She's getting better with hitting, and understands the rules of the game. She'll be playing on our younger team of kids from 5 to 7 years old, and should be ready to play with us. But,
he shrugged,
the other coaches wanted to make sure they understood the best way to communicate. So we all decided to come out and have some practices with her.
Heart pounding, she sucked in a quick breath as she twisted in a slow circle, seeing everyone who had come out, just for her daughter. As Emily chattered away with Caitlin, Aiden stepped closer to her.
I can't believe what all you've done for her, she said, her voice shaky, staring up into his blue eyes.
With his hand on her waist, he leaned forward in a gesture that was becoming not only familiar, but so welcome. He kissed her forehead, his lips lingering.
I'd do anything for her, he said.
Leaning back, he held her gaze and added,
I'd do anything for you.
The desire to kiss him was overwhelming, but aware of their audience, she settled for a heartfelt smile.
Mama, watch me!
Turning, she gave her full attention to Emily and nodded. The coaches spread out, and Caitlin threw a gentle toss toward Emily. She swung and missed the first two, but she was so proud that she did not get frustrated. On the next pitch, Emily hit the ball toward third base. She ran to first base, where Jason was waiting, giving her a simple hand signal to stop on base. He then bent and talked to her once she was safely there. Aiden batted next, sending a ball toward first base, but Jason had already given Emily the signal to run to second, where she was met with Mitch. Once again, using simple hand signals and making sure she could see his face, she halted. They continued this until she ran to home plate, where she met her with open arms and the cheers from the bleachers met their ears. Thanking everyone, she offered hugs as Emily ran around and high-fived all of her coaches. As the gathering dispersed, Aiden walked her and Emily back to her car. As his hand lightly rested on her back, there was a familiar tingle that she felt every time he touched her. As Emily climbed into the back seat and buckled in, she turned and smiled to him.
Coming to dinner?
He chuckled and said,
I've been to dinner every night for the past 2 weeks. Are you sure you're not getting sick of me yet?
She shook her head and rested her hands on his chest, her palms feeling his heartbeat. Tipping her head back to stare into his face, she said,
No, it's hard to think of anything without you now.
His smile curved his lips, transforming his already handsome face into one that was breathtaking.
Nowhere I'd rather be. Tell you what, I'll grab a pizza on the way.
Driving home with the sounds of Emily chattering in the back seat and the thought of Aiden bringing pizza to her house, the cares of the day floated away. Knowing that life held no guarantees and this happiness might not last forever, she was ready to accept it, for whatever it was, for as long as she could have it. Chapter 17. As soon as Leah and Emily got to their house, she sent Emily upstairs for a bath, knowing they had a little bit of time before Aiden returned with the pizza. Once Emily was splashing happily in the bathtub and her hair was washed, she ran into her own bedroom to change. Stripping off her work clothes, she ran to her dresser and stood, trying to figure out what to put on. It had been a long time since she had worn anything to capture a man's attention.
Well, other than the date we had a few weeks ago, where I let my insecurities get the better of me.
Okay, I can do this. It's not a big deal, she muttered out loud. Grabbing a pair of black yoga pants that she hoped did not make her ass look too big, she searched her closet for an appropriate shirt.
Not too tight, not too baggy, not boring.
Mama!
Hearing Emily call out that she was ready to get out of the bathtub, she jerked a light blue, stretchy knit top off the hanger and pulled it over her head quickly, letting the soft material settle over her hips. It might not have been her best choice, but she was in a hurry. Running across the hall, she darted into the bathroom and grabbed a towel just as Emily was climbing from the tub. As the water drained and Emily toweled off, she helped her to her room so that she could get into her pajamas. Looking at her daughter, she said,
I need to finish getting ready, and then I'll be downstairs.
Emily grinned widely and nodded. Just as she was about to leave her room, Emily called out,
Mama!
Turning, she cocked her head to the side.
I like Mr. Aiden, Emily said, staring up at her. I like him a lot. Do you?
She heard the wistful tone in her daughter's voice and walked back over, kneeling in front of her. Placing her hands on Emily's thin shoulders, she said,
Yes, baby, I do. I like having him around. He makes me laugh.
Emily's large eyes stared up at her, and her breath caught in her throat as her daughter continued.
I like the way he makes you laugh, too.
Her breath left her lungs in a rush as she stared at her daughter's hopeful face. It was like looking in a mirror. Nodding slowly, she said,
I do, too.
Emily dropped her eyes to the floor as she fiddled with the towel still wrapped around her body. She lifted her daughter's chin with her fingers so that she could stare into her eyes and asked,
What are you thinking? I think that he would make a good dad.
Tears stung her eyes as she realized how much her daughter had been thinking of this. She knew that Emily only had the barest memories of Carl, born from looking at photographs instead of actual remembrances. Hating that her daughter wanted something that might be out of her reach, she thought carefully on how to explain it to her.
I'm not sure that will ever happen. I know he likes being our friend, and you can never have too many friends. So maybe we have to be satisfied with Aiden being our friend.
She watched the wheels turning in her daughter's head when they were suddenly interrupted by the sound of the doorbell.
He's here, Emily. Run and go get dressed, and I'll let him in.
Emily's face broke into a wide smile, and she emitted a little scream as she darted into her room to get dressed. Moving to shut the light off in the bathroom, she caught a glance of herself in the mirror. She had wanted to freshen her makeup and run a brush to her hair, but there was no time. Jogging down the stairs, she called out,
Coming!
Throwing open the door, her smile widened as she saw Aiden standing on the stoop, his hands full of two large pizza boxes, a plastic bag containing whatever else he decided to grab, and a 2-liter bottle of soda.
Good grief, she called out, reaching out to grab the bag.
He came in, a sheepish look on his face, and said,
They were having a special. For the price of 2 pizzas, I also got a container of salad, which I figured would be good for Emily so that she could have her green vegetables. They also had breadsticks, which I figured would be good to have with the meal another day, and the special included the soda, which I know you don't want Emily to drink tonight since it has caffeine in it, but maybe she could have some tomorrow.
She stared, amazed not only that he bought the special, but that he had given consideration to Emily's needs while doing so. Before she had a chance to thank him, he held up another small bag.
And they also had homemade cookies for dessert.
His boyish face scrunched in concern when he added,
Well, I suppose they're not homemade since they were made in a restaurant, but their sign said they were made from scratch, so that's kind of like homemade, right?
She giggled. You're such a goof. Shrugging, she added, But a lovable goof. Come on back, Emily will be right down. She turned to lead the way to the kitchen, but his hand reached out and grabbed her shoulder. Turning around, she was mesmerized by the look in his blue eyes as he drew her closer.
Just want to say that you're beautiful tonight, he said,
his eyes never wavering from hers. Her mouth opened slightly as she melted, moving closer to him.
I wanted to freshen up more before you came, but, Emily needed help with her bath.
He leaned down and kissed her lightly on the lips. Murmuring against her soft skin, he said,
I think you're perfect, just the way you are.
With their faces barely apart, they stared into each other's eyes. Doubts, concerns, fears, insecurities all fell away. Her heart raced, and she could not remember the last time she felt such a rush of desire.
Mr. Aiden!
Emily called as she raced down the stairs. He grinned widely, winking at her before moving over to greet her freshly scrubbed little girl. Shaking herself out of her stupor, she hurried into the small kitchen and called out,
Let's eat!
The meal was fun, laughter abounding as they talked about baseball, and Aiden shared antics from when he was young. As he described the Baytown boys, she could see that Emily was not only interested, but a little wistful. Emily was starting to make friends in Baytown, and she hoped this would continue now that she had decided Baytown was where she wanted her daughter to grow up. Soon, the salad was consumed, the pizza was decimated, and the homemade cookies with milk had completed the meal. Emily usually begged to stay up a little later, but tonight she was tired. Her eyes were starting to close even sitting at the table.
Can Mr. Aiden tuck me in?
Emily asked sleepily, her words interrupted by a large yawn. She hesitated, not sure how Aiden would feel about that request, but before she had a chance to speak, he stood and scooped Emily up in his arms. With a wink at her, he stepped to the bottom of the stairs. Jerking out of her stupor, she called out, "Brush your teeth!"
"We got it," Aiden called back.
She hurried to clear the table and put the leftovers in plastic containers, shoving them into the refrigerator. Giving the counter a final swipe with a wet sponge before tossing it into the sink, she raced around the bottom of the stair rail and took the stairs two at a time. Stopping for a second to catch her breath so it did not look like she had been running, she heard voices coming from Emily's room.
"I like the taste of toothpaste, don't you?"
"I don't know. I guess I never thought about it," Aiden replied.
"At the dentist, sometimes they use stuff that tastes like bubblegum. Or it's supposed to taste like bubblegum, but I think it's yucky. I like the minty stuff Mama buys."
She stuck her head around the corner and peered into Emily's room. Emily had crawled under her covers with her favorite doll and favorite stuffed animal on either side. Aiden was kneeling on the floor by her bed, pulling the covers up. Emily yawned widely again.
"You did really good today," Aiden said. "You should be proud of yourself."
She watched as Emily held Aiden's gaze, and a nervous expression crossed her daughter's face.
"But what if I don't do so good when I play with everybody else?"
"Sweetheart, I've struck out lots of times. I've fouled out lots of times. Nobody hits the ball every time they're at bat, so it's fine if you miss. It should always be about having fun and trying your best, no matter what happens. I think you're amazing for trying."
She blinked as tears filled her eyes, lifting her fingers to press against her lips to keep the sob from bursting forth. Emily yawned once again and smiled up at Aiden.
"Sleep tight, little darling," he said softly,
bending over to kiss Emily's forehead.
"I'll send your mom in to say goodnight."
"I'm here," she said, walking into the room.
Bending over, she held her daughter's gaze as she said,
"I love you." "I love you too, Mama."
With a final kiss goodnight, she stood and followed Aiden out of Emily's room, flipping the light off as she left. They walked silently down the stairs, but as soon as they entered the living room, Aiden turned to face her. He immediately reached out, snagging her waist and pulling her close. She went willingly, her hands reaching up to clutch his shoulders. She stared up at his face, seeing longing mixed with uncertainty. She wanted to give in to the first and wipe away the second. Lifting on her toes, she moved closer, feeling his arms band tightly around her waist.
"I want to kiss you more than anything else, but I want to do the right thing here," he said,
his gaze searching hers.
"Then kiss me," she said,
her words sure and steady. Without hesitation, his lips met hers, scorching in the intensity of her overwhelming desire. One of his arms still held tightly to her waist, pulling her against his body, while the other slid up her back, pulling the clip from her hair. As it tumbled over her shoulders, he clutched the back of her head, his fingers tangled in the tresses. Angling her head, he slid his tongue through her lips, delving into the warmth of her mouth. Stepping backward, pulling her with him, he moved until the back of his legs hit the sofa. With his arms banded tight around her, he tumbled them down so she lay atop him, keeping his lips on hers. The feel of him, the taste of him, the sensations rocking through her, all combined into a lust-filled flame. She felt as though she had been holding back forever, and now the dam had broken. Aiden sensed the change in Leah as her body yielded, her soft curves aligning with his hard planes. He slid one hand down to cup her ass, kneading the soft flesh as he pressed her closer to his erection. Forcing his mind to stay on her pleasure, he slid his hand up over her hip, past the dip in her waist, and up her back, finally cupping her face. Taking the kiss deeper, he swallowed her moan as he plundered her mouth. His thumb swept over the soft apple of her cheek and focused on the delectable taste of her tongue tangling with his. She groaned and spread her legs so that her core was pressed against his upper thigh. She ground herself against the coarse material of his jeans, seeking all the friction she could gain. Moving his hand from her face downward, he felt her pulse beating wildly at the base of her neck. Skimming his palm over her breast, he slid his hand further down, until he was able to sneak it under the bottom of her shirt. He tried to tell himself he just wanted to touch her bare skin, but he knew that was a lie. The instant his fingers touched her warm, silky skin, they slid upward to just underneath her breasts. His cock was painfully aware of how close her core was as she continued to press on his upper thigh. Ignoring the desire to rip her yoga pants down her legs and take her on the sofa, he reined in his desire, wanting this to be about her, all her. He could not remember the last time he was determined to give everything he had to a woman's pleasure, without any thought to his own, but this was the gift he wanted to give Leah. Only Leah. With that in mind, he shifted her slightly so that his hand was able to skim up over her lace-covered breasts, filling his palms. Leah groaned, the electricity jolting from her nipples to her core, causing her to grind harder against Aiden's thigh. She had not had sex since Carl, and considering that he had been away for much of their marriage, it had been almost 4 years since she had been with a man. For a brief second, she wondered if she should be afraid, or hesitant, or even filled with doubt. But remembering who she was with, she was never more sure of anything in her life. She wanted to be with him. Leaning back slightly to see his face, she instantly missed the feel of his lips on hers. Meeting her gaze, his hand stilled on her breast.